Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Linda Feinholz, your host for Breakthrough Directions radio show, calling in as I do from sunny Los Angeles every week here on Blog Talk Radio. My co-host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, will be calling in shortly. And as the founder and dean of the Breakthrough Academy, it's my joy to share with my students, as well as I do with my clients, all the various tips and tricks for what it takes to be successful in business today. And I'm so delighted that we're being joined by Ann Keyes Spencer, because Ann focuses on this little attended to area of business, which is the visual side of how we build relationships and do our marketing and so on. And we're going to hear how Ann came to be doing this work, but also in really practical terms, what it is you need to do to be successful in business. And I mean this from two fronts. I mean this both whether you're focusing on your, quote, online presence as a business or whether you're actually focusing on your offline presence, as you're going to hear in a lot of detail today. So, Ann, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Well, you're so very welcome, and I'm excited.
Just as a little bit of background for everyone, Ann is the CEO and founder and owner of Visual Marketing Mentors. She's been in the exhibiting industry for over 23 years, which is really important, as you'll see today, because she's dealt with the whole stream of the development of technology and how it's influenced what we believe nowadays is how we ought to be creating our identifiable visual messages. But let's get at behind the myths and what you really need to be doing nowadays. And Visual Marketing Mentor specializes in working with companies who attend live marketing events such as trade shows, trade fairs, conventions, meetings, expos, and so on. But it all ties together in business. So, Ann, I'm so delighted to have you with us.
Well, it's you're calling from sunny California, and
yes.
It's finally sunny here in Georgia.
Yay! And I know we have listeners from all around the world, and I love being able to share with them what's happening on different parts of wherever our guests are calling in from, because it actually influences business to a tremendous degree. I was talking with a business client who's actually was in London for 2 weeks, and you know, with all the best laid plans in the world in London, you always have to have an umbrella with you because you do not know every half hour what the weather is going to be, and that can mean a lot for our marketing activities.
That's so true. That's so very true.
So I would love it if you would expand a little bit. We're going to talk about your background because I think it's really critically important that people understand the depth and breadth of your knowledge and insight that you're bringing to your clients. But right now, nowadays, what are the core products and services that you and your team are providing to your clients?
We start with the basics. We have programs that teach our clients. We offer training on how to exhibit, when to exhibit. We offer training on expanding on your visual marketing. If we can get our clients to understand that your visual marketing represents you, it's your brand, it's your company. Once we have spoken to them about that, and then we have clients who've been exhibiting for many years, we offer them in-booth services where we actually can come in and work with their team to make them better. Aside from that, we also help our clients design their graphics. Sometimes we even have design logos. We work with them on what trade show properties, like displays, table drapes, flags, banners, what's best for you at this particular time in your company's development. And then we move all the way up to I've done 100 by 100 displays with 16-foot towers and spinning signs.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is fun. We offer that service as well. That would be the total exhibit experience from designing to building the exhibit. We also do modular and portable exhibits. Along with that, we have logistical services where we actually will warehouse, ship, store displays, graphics, incentive items. With incentive items, we can, you know, do the fulfillment for that and actually ship those items to the store, to the show. After that, we also offer what we call installation and dismantle services. We will have our team come and install the display, be it a 10-foot display or, as I said, a 100-by-100, and then after the show, dismantle it, and then our shipping services will bring it back to the client, to their next show, or back to our warehouse. So that's the whole gamut of what we offer as products and services for our clients.
You mentioned something that I think is really important for our listeners to understand, which is this is not a graphic design service. What this is a strategic implementation of communicating with people, helping that client communicate with their prospects, their current clients, and so on visually in often very large-scale settings.
Uh-huh.
And it's really important that people understand that you start off with what's the business strategy and what's this particular activity supposed to be doing for their business.
Exactly. We encourage our clients to do three basic things, and one of them is to understand and gear all your marketing at live events towards the idea or the concept that you only have 3 seconds to impress some people. What that means is that now at trade shows and trade fairs and conferences and meetings, most of the people that are attending are multitasking. They are on their phone. They are on their iPad. They are talking with other people. They are walking down an aisle, and if you don't clearly define who you are and what your message is within 3 seconds, they're going to pass you by. The second thing we encourage our clients and we try to make them understand is that your brand is you. If you want to be Coca-Cola, if you want to be IBM, if you want to be any of those major corporations in your look and style, you need to understand that your brand needs to be consistent across all of your visual marketing items. That includes tiny little things like the font that you use, tiny little things like your brochures that you're handing out at the trade shows and your portfolios that you give to great prospects. What if the colors don't match? One of them is your PMS color. The other one is slightly off. That doesn't seem like a big thing, but when your prospective client looks at what you hand it to them or what you send them to on the web, I encourage QR codes, what you send them to on the web is not consistent, then they discount you. The third thing we encourage our clients to do is find out about the show that you're going to. There are all kinds of resources where you can go and find out what the attendance was, how much is the square footage, what are the demographics, who are they C-level, is it a horizontal show, is it a vertical show? Do some investigating before you go, and as I like to tell my clients, I'm not here to help you buy a booth and get a space. I'm here to help you determine whether or not that's even a good investment for you. And if it is a good investment, then we need to increase on your return on that investment by making sure that all the components fit.
I think there are many shows that I've been to over the years where, there's a giant banner, big splash sticking up so that you know, it's in a shockingly different color, something to try and get people's attention and shout, I'm over here. But the reality is that most people in their booths can't go to that kind of extreme. They're not going to take up, you know, a whole lot. I'm not certain what the right size pad is to describe. You know, an IBM's going to go in and occupy a giant zone, but the average
right.
business is not going to do that.
That is correct.
Yeah,
yeah, and what we want with the average, small, medium size business is to tell them that big is always not better. Okay, that in a small 10-foot space, if you are consistent, if you have great graphics, if you have one of the key elements is motion, lights, and your graphics, and then have specific bullet points that are the core, you can attract a large amount of the attendees. Because attendees go to shows to either gather information, do purchasing. There are a lot of shows where people purchase at the show, or they go to fact find about their competitors. So you have people walking shows that are your competitors that are looking at your space, and they're trying to ascertain how they can be better than you. There are people who come to find out, can you help them? What do you offer? And they need that information in a timely manner, and they need to be able to get it and go. So all of the focus is on your space, be it 10 feet, be it a tabletop, be it a 10 by 20, whatever will work in that space that, number one, 3 seconds, number two, accentuates your brand, and number three is clear and concise so that client, potential client, can look at you and say, okay, I want to go in there and get more information.
And as you said, nowadays there's basically 3 seconds to actually have someone have that reaction, see the content, react to it, make a decision to walk in.
That is correct.
Or to be remembered.
Yeah, and you do want to be remembered. But here's the thing. I don't care how much we make you look good and how we get your creative, we get the message across by using creative graphics and stuff like that. There is a human component, and that human component is also very, very, very essential. Think about the trade shows that you've been to, and I want the audience to think about it too. Here's the thing. As you're walking down that trade show, or if you're in Europe, you're at that trade fair, and you're walking down the aisles, how many times have you seen the following things? Somebody on their phone, somebody on their iPad, someone eating, someone talking to another booth staffer. The booth is blocked. You can't get in. The incentive table is all messy and stuff. It's all junked up. Do you stop? No, you keep walking. I have a picture that I use in my training sessions. This was at a big show. It's called the Bio Show. And the booths there are very much an investment. And I have a picture of a 10 by 20 that I know a particular client probably spent with the booth staffers and everything, $40,000 easily.
Easily.
In this particular picture, one of the guys is sitting on the floor. Another guy is reared back in a chair. Another guy is on his phone. And the three guys, one on the floor, one reared back in his chair, and the other guy is talking to the first guy on the floor. In the background of that picture, there's an attendee that's walking by, and you can tell that she glances over. She keeps on walking. Would you stop? So we also want our clients to know that if you're going to send somebody to that show, they also have to represent your brand, and they also have to remember two rules. Number one, it's the customer. And number two, the customer is always right. So you need to remember those. Those are old-fashioned values, but they still pertain to today's world.
And so relevant today when people are, as you were describing, completely and utterly distracted before they even give the slightest bit of mind share to the fact that they're at this event to get information or start relationships. This is very much about the subtle side of relationship building. How did you come to be doing this work?
Well, my background is that I was I started off in broadcasting. I worked for a radio station. I was what they call the traffic manager. I handled commercials and scheduled them and made sure they got done. I also did voiceovers and things like that. And I got married, and my husband and I decided that I needed something with better hours than radio. And I actually worked in the actuarial department of an insurance company, a very large insurance company, and was told by my boss that I was way too loud and too colorful for the insurance company. And he encouraged me to find something where I could be a lot more outgoing. He didn't fire me. He just encouraged me because he said, "Ann, you know, the minute you walk in the door, we know you're here." And that, not so good. So maybe you need to find something that's so more outgoing. I ended up working with the Yellow Pages. I started off as a sales rep. I worked my way to a supervisor. I eventually became an area manager and a trainer for the Yellow Page division. And subsequently, that was corporate. Everybody knows that's corporate. You're in this box, I'm in this box, et cetera. And I was traveling a great deal and had teenagers and decided that I couldn't continue to do that. One of my friends owned a headhunter executive marketing firm and told me that there was a company that was looking for someone to work their marketing department here in Atlanta. So in Commack, New York, I went for an interview and ended up working with Skyline, which, as most people who do displays and graphics, Skyline is the largest exhibit company in the world. It's huge. So I came down here to their corporate and worked in their corporate office. I'm sorry, I was already here, but I worked in their corporate office and enjoyed it, was fascinated with it. I absolutely loved being in the trade show industry. It allowed me to, number one, interact with clients. It allowed me to have design decisions. It allowed me to train. I did road shows. We did training, all of this type of thing. And I really, it was the best outlet for me that I could possibly have had after being in a corporate setting. From Skyline, I eventually ended up with Nimlock, which is the other major corporation. They're based out of England with headquarters here in the U.S. and worked with them. I am a certified trade show marketer. I have several other certifications in the industry as well. The path I took to get from broadcasting, insurance, the Bell System, to being in the trade show industry was very crucial in making me understand how important it is for people to, or for companies to understand about branding and working with visual marketing. My company started off at Spencer Consulting while I was still working for the other companies. It became Exhibit Essentials, E2, and then in 2007 I changed the name to Visual Marketing Mentors, LLC, because I didn't want people to think that all we concentrated on was exhibits. That's not what we do.
And when we talk about creating an identifiable look and feel that represents you, your story, your message, your business, you've done that for yourself as well.
Yes, I did. like I tell people all the time, you are your brand. So when people see me, I am known for a couple of things here in Atlanta. Number one is I wear hats. I wear fedoras. And I have a hat for every different occasion. I also wear clothes that are colorful, let's put it that way, but stylish. And I try to make it so that people not only remember visual marketing, they remember me. Because if I'm going to tell you how to put your visual marketing out there, I have to have the same thing for myself. When I do an exhibit, when I am sharing a space or I do my own space, I make sure that everything is consistent down to how I interact with people. The other thing is that when I'm doing my own space, I always bring someone else with me that is in tune to what my company does. It may be a sister company, somebody who has a product or service that I can recommend to my clients. But we don't stay in the booth. We rotate. We take time to go out and meet and greet the exhibitors and meet and greet the attendees and make sure that people come to the booth in order to get more information about Visual Marketing Mentors.
Gina's joining us. So, Gina.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here with us, and I know you've got a couple of questions as well for Ann. You're still muted, Gina. We're enjoying.
How about now?
There we go! Yay! The joys of
my wonderful headset again. Well, really great to meet you, Ann. Sorry about that. I was talking away here, and you just couldn't hear me.
I couldn't hear a thing. I was like, oh, okay.
But, and I know that you came to us and got introduced to us through a mutual friend, Tana Toronto, from OSPO, the organization supporting business owners. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that both you and Tana are doing right now involves working with companies that are green. And I would love to know more about what you're doing with eco-friendly exhibits and displays and trade shows and whatnot.
Okay, well, let me tell you that in our industry, we have seen a really great turnaround in the manufacturing of eco-friendly displays. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, if you wanted a bamboo banner, yes, you could get it, but it would cost you around $800 or $900. Now there are many manufacturers who offer that same product at a very, very, very good price point, and they also have made strides toward making sure that there are components on eco-friendly displays that adhere to all of the standards. For example, we now have a plexiglass that's not plexi. It is an eco-friendly compound that is easy to break down. We have bamboo. We have LED lights instead of halogen lights and tungsten or regular lights. We now offer table drapes that have low, as far as the printing process is concerned, they emit low volume gas when they're being printed, which is good for the environment. We also offer displays that are recyclable. For example, the metal that's used in a lot of the eco-friendly displays can be recycled. The banners can be recycled, especially if they're fabric or a bamboo fabric. We also take plastic bottles and recycle them into fabric that can be used on displays. So we've come a long, long way in the industry in making sure that our clients can, you know, use this option. And one of the websites that I provided you is the eco-friendly page to our website that, you know, we have a lot of options for companies who want to be good to the environment.
And that is bbbnow.com/V for visual, M for marketing, M for mentors, ECO, VMMECO. Again, that's www.bbbnow.com/VMMECO. And I have a feeling that this goes back to what you said a few moments ago. You are your brand and things like your fedora hat. So eco-friendly exhibits and displays are not just for eco-friendly types of companies, not companies that sell products to people in the sustainable living arena, but for companies that really want to build their brand around being green. Is that true?
That's very true, and we encourage clients. If you go on my website, you will see that I have my eco-friendly logo that I had designed. We encourage clients to let your prospective buyers know that you are eco-friendly. You don't. Okay, let's go back 20 years. If you were eco-friendly, you wore Birkenstocks and you hugged trees.
Okay. Right.
That's the way it was seen. But now it's seen as being responsible and being a responsible steward. With OSBO, one of the things that we encourage people, like on your website somewhere, you might put, we recycle. One of my clients, and I absolutely love this client, we've been together since 1995, but he actually recycles paper in his office. If something needs to be printed, it's printed, but if you don't have to use it again after you do the presentation or whatever, you flip the page over and you print on it again. He's been doing that for like 2 years. So, you know, it's very important that you realize that these exhibits are not just for companies that are in the green business, but they're for any company that wants to show that they are a responsible steward of the environment.
And, you know, I'm looking for a link to it. I can't seem to put my fingers on it. I'll look for it in a little bit, too. There's been a number of studies done in the recent past about how important it is to people overall to buy green and to really be choosing products on purpose based on whether or not the company is really interested in being green and good to the environment or not. So if two companies are equal in terms of their products, but one is eco-friendly and the other isn't, it can really make a big difference in the buying decision of their customers. So what a great direction for you to take companies in.
It does make a difference, and people need to understand that sometimes you don't even know that that person is thinking that way. But it's just one more thing. When you're doing your presentation, when you're not at a trade show or trade fair or convention or whatever, and your force goes out to meet the client after the client has contacted you and you're engaging with the client, you present a proposal for them. A lot of companies now are doing proposals as PDFs online because that is a green option, okay? So you do your proposal, and on the front cover, you have your little green emblem. Okay. It may not mean anything, but it may be something that the person looks down at and goes, ooh, that's interesting. And then they go ahead and consider your proposal. Little things like that, like doing your proposals online, sending the client a PDF, even better, including a video or link to YouTube, whatever, something that has motion sound, that's a better way of getting business.
Just one more way of distinguishing yourself from your competition, isn't it?
Exactly.
And I don't know about in your world, but in my world, I see so few people really paying attention to that, that it would be very unlikely that my competitors were doing all of those things. So if I'm the one and only one in my industry doing it, it's going to make a difference in who I attract as a customer.
It will make a difference. And you being offering sustainable options to our clients is one of the things that we take great pride in. When I go to shows, I always bring my bamboo banner. And if I've been involved in several green expos here in Atlanta, and at one particular expo, I had my entire booth area consisted of sustainable items.
Wow.
Down to the fact that we had a monitor that was showing our best display designs and client designs and stuff like that, and it was on a monitor. We did not hand out paper. What we said to people is that if you would like our green option PDF, please leave your business card, and we will email it to you.
Wow. Well, there was a study done not that long ago, and that's why I was looking so hard for this link. They had interviewed something like 100,000 people about the topic of, does green make a difference in your buying decisions? And it was a huge number. I remember it was something over 80% of the people said it absolutely does. And, in fact, they're willing to pay more for products from responsible companies than they would for the same product from a non-eco-commerce-related business.
It really speaks to the change in the value system that's happened really, as you pointed out, in just the span of a very few years. And, you know, we have generations of people that are coming up now that are value-based in all of their decision-making, and they don't mind paying more if the service, the product, the program that they're buying is a fit with their value system.
That's true. I want to give you guys just a couple of rules for green meetings so that the clients the people who are listening can, you know, take away
That'd be really helpful, Anne.
Okay. Number one, if you're attending a trade show, trade fair, meeting, conference, and you're a small business or you're a medium-sized business, find some green sponsors, okay, if you can. Then also, try to create electronic attendees. You know, have people, if you're putting on the event, say you're having a corporate meeting or you're getting all your salespeople in or all of your distributors in, do online registration. Make sure that these attendees receive digital conference materials. You know how you go to a meeting and they give you all these books and all these pieces of paper? Well, do it online. And the reason I say that is most people have a smartphone. Most people have either an iPad, mini, a notebook or something. So as they're walking around the conference and they need to find somebody, why open a big clunky book when you can just go to the page and find the person and then walk to their booth? Okay? The other thing is that recycle. Very simple. In your booth or at your event, have recycle bins and encourage people to recycle. And the last thing I would say is, last two things, is get rid of disposable items. For example, if you're going to give bottled water to your attendees or if you're going to give bottled water to people who come in your area, in your booth, then use recyclable or reusable water bottles, okay? And if you're in Europe and you're doing a trade fair, use dishes and fabric napkins and silverware instead of paper or plastic ones. You can rent those items, okay? And then the other thing is give back, okay? By that, I mean you can, you know, make sure that you purchase offsets for all the carbon, you know, emissions that may occur at the event. You can have your event where the attendees will give a contribution to a local cause, and then you make it a big experience that teaches them about being green but doesn't bore them. So those are just a few things that people can do to kind of green up their events.
Tana, what's the same and what's different when you're doing these kinds of events and marketing efforts here in North America or the United States versus overseas in different parts of the world?
Well, in Europe, in England, any of the other countries, the mindset is different from the trade fairs, and the mindset is different. At trade fairs in Europe, there is a lot of emphasis on making sure that the attendee understands that you want to form a relationship with them. You rarely go to Messe Frankfurt or any of the other ones where you don't see that each one of the areas offers refreshment. I know at Harrogate in the UK, at their conference center, you know, there's tea time. There's time to sit down and actually get to know your prospective client. You would not have, if you have a large space and even a small space, you would not have it where the attendee walks in and someone doesn't engage them and offer them a beverage or a food item or to sit down and to talk. In the USA, we are the exhibits and the exhibit halls concentrate more on the attendees walking away with information about the company, but they don't spend that much time trying to get to know the attendee. They don't want, they don't budget that kind of time. It's a three-day event, whereas something overseas might be a two-week event, okay? So there's a lot of difference in that. How do we here in the U.S. make it so that we have more valued customers and clients like they do in Europe? Slow down. Yes, you cannot spend all day talking to one person, but really take the time and slow down. The other tip that I have is that if you meet someone and they give you their business card, have in place a system that that night or that next morning, that person receives a personal greeting in their email, on their phone, on their pad that says, Susie Johnson, thank you so much. By that time, she should be Susie to you, but if she isn't, thank you so much for stopping by. You said you wanted information about so-and-so, so-and-so. Here's a link to that. Make sure you have a landing page. Here's a link to that additional information. I look forward to speaking with you soon. Something like that. So we can use our electronic items and everything to create that sense of, hey, Susie, you are important to me, because we don't have the luxury of time.
And you're describing events, for instance, in Europe as being much longer and slower paced. Are the people you're seeing in attendance of those events equally using their cell phones, their iPads, and so on? Just the overall pace is a slower pace?
Again, you go back to cultural differences. It is very rude to be talking on your phone and glancing down at your phone and glancing down at your iPad. That is considered to be rude. You are there to meet and greet people. And so you not only don't do those things, but once you're engaged in talking with the person, if they want to take you to a website or they want you to capture something, that's different. But you don't do what so many of us in America do, in the USA and Canada. What we do is we'll be talking to someone, and I know this has happened to you, lady. Haven't you been talking to someone and they're glancing down at their phone?
Absolutely. And it may be that as you're describing something, they're then researching it online, and it, you know, they may actually be on topic, but it doesn't matter. You're looking at the top of their head.
Yep, you're looking at the top of their head. And what's the one thing that all of us learned as when you were at university, you learned that one, and taking a business course, you learned that one of the best ways to engage people is to what? Make eye contact.
That's
and
right.
It's like being in a store. Remember when you're in a store and you don't want the clerk to bother you? What do you do?
You make sure they can't catch your eye.
Right. But if you want them to come to you, you look directly at them, and they know you want them to come. Same thing with working a display. Get out there and make eye contact. Stand at the edge of your booth and make eye contact. Speak. In the European market, what you want is, and what happens is that you're engaging and you are making that person feel valuable, yet they're going to go see 15 other of the areas. They're going to go and meet with 15 other people. But the impression you want to leave with them is that, once again, Susie, you are important to me, important enough for me to put aside my cell phone, put aside my iPad, for me to stand there and look you in the eye and discuss what was important to you, what you needed to know about my company, and how I am a solution to your problems, your pain. I can help you with that, and here's how.
I love everything you're sharing, and you know, if folks here in the United States at various events would adopt the exact same behavior here, you'd stand out in a crowd because, again, you're building relationship by putting down the electronics, making eye contact, starting conversation, even just greeting people with a smile. So
yeah,
that even if they, in that moment, don't intend to come into the booth because they have some other destination or they've got some other agenda in that moment, you will absolutely be remembered for that moment of making the eye contact and greeting someone with a smile. It absolutely creates an impact. How is it different in Asia nowadays? I have so many clients who are doing business over in China, but throughout Asia, is it the same as in Europe, or does it have its own flavor as well there?
I would encourage anyone who's doing marketing in Asia to do some research and find out the customs of that particular country before you get there. For example, in Japan, it is considered rude to hand somebody your business card. Just hand it to them. You are to hand them your business card and make sure that your information is facing them, and you would present it as if you were presenting yourself. Remember back in the Victorian days, everybody had a calling card, and you would go to the house, and if the people were wealthy, they had a butler, and you would put your calling card on the tray face up, and the butler would take it, you know, back there and say, Mr. So-and-so is calling. Or if you met someone, you would present, may I present. You know, in Japan, it's very important that you slow down and you respect the custom of the country, which is basically your business card is who you are and what you, your company name and so forth. And so you present it as if it has great value. What do we do in America? Here's my card. Call me. And then we walk away. Okay? In China, they are doing at the Chinese exhibits and stuff like that, beautiful, gorgeous, huge events. Some of them are so big, it takes you, you know, 4 or 5 days to get through everything that you need to. But because they are a strong, dynamic force in the marketplace now, they have all of the great gizmos and gadgets and iPads and stuff like that where you can walk up and, you know, type your information in, and they have the screens and things like that. But once again, you need to know the custom of the country. And basically, it's that you must present yourself in a respectful manner. You can't just barge in. You can't just walk up and say, hey, you know, you have to be respectful. So I would say that your clients or anybody who's going to do business in the, you know, Far East, in the China and Malaysia and the Philippines and Japan and Thailand, India, please take a moment to study the customs and understand fully what you're going into and know the do's and don'ts.
Very cool. I really appreciate being able to talk with all of your wisdom and experience in those markets, because I know people just think, well, however we do it here translates. I know when I was living in Europe, the use of graphics, the use of drawing, animation, cartooning, very different quality than that which is used here in the United States. And I had someone who actually sent me a business book, and before I even opened it, I knew from the design of the cover that it was not an American, that it was not for an American audience, nor had it been designed by an American. And it's really important to know what the sensibilities are of the market that you're trying to communicate with.
Exactly. And, of course, that brings me to my favorite topic, and that is text. That is verbiage. Americans have a tendency to be, as we call it, verbose. They want to put everything up there for people to read. The truth of the matter is that 90% of all attendees do not read more than 3 lines of text. After that, it becomes redundant. They're not going to stand there and read all that stuff. So your design has to be creative. I'm going to take Messe Frankfurt as an example. They have a very distinctive logo, and when you receive, if you received printed information from them back in the day, their logo was so distinctive, it was the first thing on the brochure before you even opened it. And then they had another tagline, but what they did was it visually, just like you were saying a minute ago, it visually caught you. It was like, oh, this is important. So when people are doing their graphics, they do need to take a more European or Asian bent on the graphics and realize that less is more. Concentrate on having a wow factor. Concentrate on having something memorable. And make sure that any text that you have on your graphics means something. Nobody is particularly concerned about whether or not you've got 150 locations. Now, that's nice, but how long have you been in business? Okay, why are you in business? But the most important thing is, what can you do for me? How can you solve my problem, ease my pain? If you can tell me in a bullet point that this is how you can solve my problem, then I'm going to stop and talk to you.
It's so important, especially when you think about the noisiness of the visual environment that we're talking about, trying to get your message across and create connectedness with, you know, many, many people that are walking in that space. So, you know, thank you for that. I think that's really critically important.
With everything we've been talking about today, how does this affect things like virtual trade shows? I know that you help companies with virtual trade shows as well.
Well,
does this apply equally?
Well, some of it does apply. First of all, if you're doing a virtual trade show, the entrance to the virtual trade show has to be visually stimulating so that when people click on the link, you're using technology to make sure that they want to come further in. You have to make sure that each exhibitor's information is easily accessible in your index. You have to make sure that each exhibitor has, again, a visually stimulating, as we want to call it, front page, what people see when they first click on the link to go to that particular exhibitor. And then once you get into it, because it is virtual, the rules kind of change. And here's how they change. Because it is a virtual trade show, you can utilize videos, teleconferencing, that type of thing. In fact, one of the things you can do is you can actually click on a link and have an actual chat with somebody. Hey, I'm looking at your site here at XYZ Virtual Trade Show, and I noticed that you do diamond rotors. I have a question about that. And you can get on-time, timely, right there information. So visually, you still have to engage. But once the person is on the virtual site, then you have a tremendous amount of options. And the thing about virtual trade shows is that that is one person in the privacy of their office or home that is going into the site. You don't have to compete with the sounds of the other exhibitors. They are zeroing in on you, and it's your opportunity to engage them. You can send them instant emails. You can send them instant PDFs. You can talk to them live if you want to. You can talk to them via chat. They can order, that type of thing. So there is a difference.
And what companies should be looking at doing virtual trade shows?
Well, in my opinion, if you have a product or service that you want to sell, you can use virtual trade shows. The advantage of a virtual trade show for small companies is that you can look just like the big boys. The advantage for a virtual trade show for a larger company, a mid-size or larger company, it's just like another tool to help your clients get to you. And the same thing would be true for the small company. So if, say for instance, if the Quilting Association decided to have a virtual trade show and people who supply stuff to quilters each took a booth within the virtual trade show, it would be advantageous because it's a silent seller. It's like e-commerce marketing. It's a silent seller. It can work for you 24/7. Whenever somebody anywhere in the world goes into the virtual trade show, you are meeting your potential clients and audience.
That's such an important element that you just shared, because I think a lot of people think, I put up my website, now I don't have to think about it for a year. I put up, I put videos up, now I don't have to think about them for a year. And there's no bigger mistake than to feel like it's an item on a checklist that you put a check mark next to and shunt it off. And the same thing with virtual trade shows. This is part of the activities we undertake in order to be in relationship with the live person. It isn't somebody else's computer that's coming to read our website. It's a person on the other end that's looking for information, looking for ideas, looking for assurances that you are expert at what it is that you're providing and might be the right fit for them and the right provider of a solution and so on. So whether standing live in a trade show, a trade fair, an expo, a convention, and so on, or quote, standing while sitting and looking at a screen at a virtual trade show, there's the same need for all of us to remember this is a vehicle we're using to be in relationship with our prospective customers, our continuing customers. It's just another means of communication between the two of us.
And if you can keep in mind that when you're talking about relationships, you don't want them to be a three-second relationship. You want them to be ongoing. Most of my business that I receive is word of mouth. People who have worked with me refer other people. But I always, like I said, I have people that I have worked with since 1992. Okay? That's based upon relationships. I have people who come back to me 5 years later and say, okay, Ann, we're ready to get a new display. That is because I have stayed in contact with them via a lot of different ways, you know, emails, seeing them at shows, sending Christmas greetings, that type of thing. But relationships are what will make your business go from one level to the next level. Because if you have good relationships with your clients, they're going to refer you. Again, I'm going to use myself as an example. I just had some trees cut down in my yard. I had gotten several different quotes. But I was talking to a friend of mine and telling her and her husband how frustrated I was at the quotes and at the people and how they didn't show up and this, that, and the other. And they said, oh, well, call this guy. Called him. He treated me from the moment I heard his voice on the phone as if I was a friend. He said, okay, you know, Mrs. Keith Spencer, I'll be out to your house at such and such a time, and let's take a look, and we'll tell you what we think. And he showed up on time, did what he was supposed to. His crew came Saturday. They cut down six trees. All members of his crew were personable, came and even though I was standing out there most of the time, they would come and tell me what they were going to do next. They would make sure that I understood, all of that. That whole company was owned by the father, passed down to the son. The son even came and made sure that the job was correct. Now, that's good business.
That's fantastic business.
Yeah, because here's what they did. They, number one, listened to what my pain was. They came out, they offered a solution to my pain. They held my hand as they went through eliminating the items that were a pain. They made sure I was okay with everything. And at the end, they wrapped up by saying to me, is this satisfactory for you? All this before I paid them.
Fabulous.
What I'm saying to your audience is that your relationship with even the smallest of your clients, once you use your visual marketing, whichever way you want to use it, to engage that client, it still comes back to the same thing. You've got to make them feel that they are of value to you and your company. And once you've done that, you can go on to the next step.
Really wonderful. We've got four different links in the show notes to more information that you've been referring to today. So I just want for our listeners to know that if you go to bbdnow.com/VMM for Visual Marketing Mentors, you'll be able to get to her site and see more information about the products and services. And as Gina mentioned before, bbdnow.com/VMMECO is information all about the green marketing. And even better is if you go to bbdnow.com/VMM handbook, Anne has a handbook that's downloadable. That's the marketing handbook. That's there for you. Furthermore, we started today with the idea that it's so important to remember that with everyone's fast pace and distraction nowadays, you've got about 3 seconds to connect and communicate with your prospective clients. And Anne has information for you at bbdnow.com/VMM and then the number 3. So, Anne, thank you so much for all the information that you shared with everyone today. I don't know if there's any last thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience as we wrap up the show today.
Well, I think that if I can leave your audience with just one particular item, it would be that please remember at all times you are your brand. Respect it.
Really great advice, Anne. Thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing all that you've shared with our listeners. If I can ever do anything to help you, I'm sure this is the same with Linda, please feel free to reach out. We'd love to help you in any way that we can.
All right. Thank you so much.
And Linda and I will be back same time, same place next week for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.